You're listening to TIP.
Everybody should start there because honestly, so many people crap on wholesalers and it is honestly the hardest part of this business. If you got really good at wholesaling, you can do anything in this business.
On today's show, I chat with Derek Acuff about the lessons he's learned from flipping and wholesaling real estate, how to manage many real estate projects at once, some of the horror stories he's experienced, how to find good contractors and what red flags to watch out for when hiring one, what his strategy is for finding off-market deals, and we talk about a bunch more as well. Derek is a father, entrepreneur, and successful real estate investor. Outside of just this podcast episode, Derek has provided me a lot of value personally and given me a lot of insight into things I can do differently or better with my businesses. So I'm sure you guys are going to get a ton of value from this episode too, and hopefully really enjoy it. Let's dive right in.
You're listening to Real Estate Investing by the Investors Podcast Network, where your host, Robert Leonard, interviews successful investors from various real estate investing niches to help educate you on your real estate investing journey.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Real Estate 101 podcast. As always, I'm your host, Robert Leonard, and with me today, I have Derek Acuff. Derek, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
We know each other a bit from the mastermind that we're in, but for those who are listening that don't know you yet, tell us a bit about your background and your story. How'd you get into real estate?
It's kind of funny because I always had this like knack for real estate growing up. When I was in high school, one of my buddy's dad owned a bunch of Domino's and I, you know, grew up playing Monopoly. And so I always had this fascination with owning stuff. I always realized like growing up in a blue collar place, I grew up in a very small town in Tennessee and it's a lot of hardworking people, but I always looked at the future. And like when it came to retirement and most of these people had to work, they never really got to retire, you know? So it just, I always had this fascination with real estate. I grew up there. My dad always lived in Houston. So when I was about to graduate high school, I made a trip down here. And at the time, my dad worked for this very wealthy individual. And just like being in the room with them and like hearing their conversations, they were doing real estate deals and talking oil and gas money and like all this entrepreneur stuff. It really sparked some ideas in my mind. And, you know, that was a very pivotal age. I think I was 17 at the time. And it just kind of changed my outlook on life. But the main takeaway from that 4-day trip was I need to be around people that think like this, because nobody in my hometown where I was from, you know, other than my friend's dad, really owned anything. So it just like changed my whole perspective. So when I was like 19, I saved up money from that trip until I was able to move. I moved to Houston. And still at that point, the whole idea was to get into oil and gas. I just realized that's where the money was. It's in Texas, it's very prevalent, easy to get a job. You could start out making six figures. So my goal was to go to school because I was in college at the time and become a petroleum engineer. And then eventually I just assumed in my late 30s or mid 30s, whenever I would start buying real estate, we just, you know, give ourselves these unrealistic timelines. And whenever I was in college, I always did okay at college. I hated school. But what I learned, you know, since getting into real estate is like, I don't hate learning. I just hated what they were teaching. And I was, you know, finishing up my associate's degree. And I remember I heard this quote that was like, you'll never learn to make $1 million from somebody who makes $70,000 a year. And around that time, I had went to, you know, one of these seminars and found out about real estate and wholesaling. So it was just like this perfect storm of me finishing my associate's degree, going to the seminar, hearing this quote and just realizing like, if I ever wanted to do something different with my life, that was the time, because I didn't have any student loan debt. I'd been paying my way through college and I knew I was about to take on student loans to finish to get my bachelor's degree. And I had learned about this thing called wholesaling. And I just kind of took a gamble and was like, I'm going to try this for 2 years and see where it takes me. And, you know, here we are almost 6 years later and I kind of haven't looked back, not to say that it's been an easy journey, but you know, that's just kind of like how I got into real estate.
What you mentioned about not listening or not taking advice from somebody that makes $70,000 a year when you want to make $1 million a year is probably one of the most impactful things that I've ever learned. It's the same idea of like not following or learning from somebody that hasn't done what you want to do. Because for a lot of people, when you grow up, you just listen to your parents, you listen to your friends, etc. But then you just sit back and realize, like, they're not actually doing what I want to be doing. So why would I be taking advice from these people? And it's intuitive. Like, why would you listen to them if they're not doing what you want to do? And why wouldn't you listen to somebody that is? But for me, it was really a big thing to learn, even though it was somewhat intuitive, but it still really opened my mind. It was kind of mind-blowing to me. And it's hard, right? Like, for me, I really, really respect my dad. He's really successful in his own light, but he's not successful in the areas of life that I want to be successful in, like real estate, et cetera. So even though I respect him and what he does, it's really hard to tell him, like, hey, I'm not going to take your advice on all these other things because you haven't done what I want to do. Have you found that to be an issue in any of your parts of life?
Yeah, it's, you know, since I moved out of my hometown, it's kind of been like a lone wolf journey. I feel like it isn't really till now, you know, 6 years in, that I'm starting to build this like solid group of people around me. But the main, I always call it like separation season. Like, you have to go through this point in your life where you have to realize, like, it's about me. You have to be selfish. And when I moved out of my hometown, you know, when you move 16 hours away, you realize who your real friends are and the people that stay in contact with you. So I'm just like a burn the bridge type of person. Also, I grew up an only child, so I've spent a lot of time by myself, you know, with a single mom always working. I had to get comfortable with being by myself. And even though I was very comfortable, when you live 16 hours away and you don't know anyone, it's still very scary. But that was like the best time of my life, as hard as it was, because, like I said, I realized who was there for me. I also realized, you know, this is going to be a lot harder than I imagined. And also, like, the people that were speaking into my life, not that making $70,000 a year is a bad thing. Like you said, like, success looks different to everyone. I just realized that's not what I wanted out of life. I wanted freedom. And like, when you meet somebody that's like a 100 millionaire and you see how they live their life and their day to day and just being able to do whatever they want, that's what I wanted. And unfortunately, you know, to get a lot of those things, you have to have a lot of money. And, you know, not that money is bad or good, it's just a tool. And I just realized, like, those people that I wanted to be around and, you know, that I thought were successful to me, that's what they were doing. And I couldn't necessarily hang around the people that I, you know, it's like, what got you here will not get you there. So it's like the people that I had hung around, they were cool, but we were all making the same amount of money. Whereas, like, now, most of my friends are like millionaires or very successful people, and I'm like a small fish. But that's good, because they're trying to pull me up and I'm working really hard and I'm also pulling people up as well. So it's a beautiful cycle, but you definitely have to separate yourself from, you know, bad energy, I just say, in general, because bad things are going to happen, especially in what we do, real estate. Yeah, that's a guarantee. So if I can limit, you know, what affects from the outside, like, that's what I want to do.
Have you read Rich Dad Poor Dad?
Yeah, multiple times. My son, like we were just talking before we got on, my son is 10 and he's probably been through, listened to, and read it, I think, like 6 or 7 times already now. Because, you know, I learned it at like 20 something. If he can learn that at 10, you know, I would probably be, I'd already be a millionaire.
Yeah, I figured you had read it. When you were telling me your story about your friend's dad with the dominoes, that was like the first thing that popped in my head was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Do you think that was kind of like a similar situation? Had you given that any thought?
Yeah, like, it's funny, like, cause you always, I saw a quote this morning, I think my partner posted it. Like, you realize everything, that you connect the dots when you look back in life, right? You don't know what's going to happen when you're looking forward, but when you look back, it all makes sense. And like, for me, I definitely feel that I lived Rich Dad, Poor Dad, because even though my friend's dad wasn't like super wealthy, it just gave me a whole new perspective. And then I had my mom who worked really hard. But, you know, a lot of times as a high school student, I had to work at Domino's to help cover the mortgage because she wasn't able to, you know, she was working really hard, but she didn't own anything. And I realized, like, working hard is not just the key to it. You got to work smarter and harder. And, you know, when I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, I was like, holy crap, like, this is kind of like my life, you know what I mean, that I lived through. But I'm so thankful for that because, you know, it definitely just gave me a whole new perspective on life. And at a critical age, you know, from 12 to 18, that's such a pivotal point, especially in a, you know, a teenager's life. So, you know, get this new understanding of money and what it looks like. It was definitely very pivotal for me.
Did you end up going directly into real estate full time, or did you do something after college in between as like a job while you did real estate on the side? What did that kind of transition look like?
Since I've been in college, you know, I've waited tables, which was like, it's funny that you know, because when I talk to people and they're like, so that must not have translated very well, like waiting tables to real estate. And I'm like, honestly, I can't think of something better that you could do before getting into real estate based on the problem solving, you know, having to talk to people really nice when they're not nice to you. You know, there's just so many issues that we deal with in real estate that relates. So I was waiting tables going to college. And then, like I said, I finished and I received my associate's degree and I was, you know, supposed to go to University of Houston and like become this petroleum engineer. And I was like, I'm just going to take some time off, dive into this, do this for 2 years and see where it takes me. So I was still working, obviously, like 40 hours a week, but all my free time was going into studying. But, you know, I had analysis paralysis for like 8 months. So even after I finished school, there was still, you know, 6 or 7 months that I knew everything. I listened to every Bigger Pockets episode, you know, every podcast, YouTube video, but I never took action. And then like one day my girl was in a bad mood and she was just like, hey, look, because, you know, every day I'm just listening to podcasts. Like she's just at her wit's end. And she was like, you know, I love you, but like you either need to take action or just like shut the F up about real estate. Like that's, you know, one or the other. I don't care what you do, but like, we've been doing all this, you put in all this work, but you haven't actually took any action. And that next week, you know, I sent out some mailers and, you know, got a lead and, you know, we can get into that, like what the first deal looked like. But that was another one of those pivotal moments. Like sometimes you just need a kick in the butt to take action because we think it's so hard. But then once you do it, you're like, oh, okay. Like this is, it makes it real.
That sounds like the kind of woman that you need in your life.
Yeah, that's one of many kick in the butts that she's given me over the last almost 9 years that we've been together.
How did you transition from working and doing real estate on the side to just real estate full time? How'd you know you were ready? When did you make that jump? What did that look like?
Honestly, it's another one of those things like I hate it. I've always hated working for someone else. I've never been good with authority because once again, I was an only child. I grew up in the country. I had way too much freedom as a kid, like things that like adults were doing, like I was doing, like, so I've just never been good with authority. So my last job, I remember we got a new manager at the restaurant and like, they just changed everything. Like, you know, we weren't able to have big sections, so we couldn't make any money really. On top of that, they were like micromanaging. So I hated going to work. Like I physically hated it. And I remember I got my first deal on my birthday when I was like 24. And then I think I locked up two more deals and I was like, yeah, I'm done with my job. Like, this is it. Like, and I remember one weekend I was still like contemplating quitting. And like one weekend they just like really screwed me over. And like, they didn't put it on the schedule, but made me come in like 3 hours early after I had like just closed. So like I had no sleep. Then I was supposed to work a double. And the first weekend they did it, I was like, okay, it's a mistake, whatever. But then they did it the second weekend. And then I was just like, hey, this is going to be my last day. And I just quit, man. I just burned the bridges. Not everybody should operate like that. But for me, I do better under pressure. And, you know, after that, I definitely went broke several times. And, you know, I tried figuring it out those first 2 years. But, you know, it puts pressure on me. And luckily, my girl had a good job at the time. Like I said, she's super supportive. She knew the vision. And, you know, I had a mentor at the time, so I had people around me that were doing the business. It was just, I had a lot to figure out those first couple of years.
What did you do as your first strategy? I know you're flipping today. Did you jump right into flipping? Is that what you've done mostly your whole time? And what did your first deal look like?
So my first deal, it was a probate deal. This family had inherited a house. I think it was a son of this lady. And my first deal was actually very easy. Now, I took a lot of rejection. Like it took me 6 months after, you know, because taking it back, you know, after my girl gave me that kick in the butt, that was in like November. So I was like in January of that year, I think it was 2016. I'm going to commit all my extra time. Like I'm going to go 100% in on real estate, like stop dabbling, just listening. Like I'm actually going to take consistent action every day till I get a deal. And it took me 6 months and I went on a lot of appointments, but I was mainly focusing on wholesaling. I realized that's another reason I have paralysis analysis is like I was learning all these strategies, but I wasn't doing anything. And I heard a Bigger Pockets episode one day. It was like, just pick something and go. And I was like, it's going to be wholesaling, right? I just started where I was. I didn't have a lot of money. And I knew if I could find really good deals, then I could, you know, that's the key to every real estate transaction is if you can find really good deals, everybody said you would figure the rest out. So that's what I focus on. I started with direct mail. Like I said, did that for 6 months. And then my first deal was relatively easy, even though like I was at my breaking point the week before And then 2 days later, I go on an appointment. And then on my 24th birthday, I got my first deal. And honestly, I just took my mentor on the appointment and he was like, yeah, this is a deal. And then he called me back like a few days later and was like, on my birthday, I remember being at the gym and everything. He's like, hey, happy birthday. We got your first deal. You're going to make, you know, we made $8,000. We split it evenly. And honestly, it was too easy because he did a majority of the work. But, you know, obviously I'd put in the work up until that point. Yeah. So I just wholesaled and I did that for the first 2 years, whether that was by myself or JVing with people. I wholesaled for, you know, probably 2.5 years. And then I bought a rental. And then after that, me and my partner got into flips. And then that's just kind of over the last couple of years, just taken off into its own thing. And like now we flip wholesale. We're building an Airbnb portfolio. I just closed on some land. We're about to do a 4-townhome development. On top of, like I said, I think we have like 12 or 13 flips going on. I'm about to buy a couple more. Like, you know, it's just all this started though from focusing on just getting really good at wholesaling. I've got really good at finding off-market, deeply discounted properties.
What is wholesaling and why could you start it without a lot of money?
Wholesaling is everybody should start there because honestly, so many people crap on wholesalers and it is honestly the hardest part of this business. If you got really good at wholesaling, you can do anything in this business. But wholesaling to me, I try to simplify everything to a third grade level. So it's an ABC transaction. A, you have a motivated seller. They have a reason to sell the property. For me, that was a person who inherited a home that they didn't want. They had a lot of memories. And it needed work, right? It's always going to need some improvements. So that's your A person. B is the wholesaler. I am the middleman. And I am basically going to bring in a cash investor, your C person, your cash buyer, who is going to then close on the transaction. And at closing, which you don't even have to attend, you will get a check of that portion. And you just kind of are providing a service from A to C. And, you know, just like Kroger buys products and they have a wholesale person in between, you're doing the same, but with houses. And I know wholesaling's become so popular. I think there's definitely a right way and a wrong way to do that. That's why, you know, certain states are starting to crack down. I like to teach people how to do it the right way, though, because I think that's how you'll last in this business.
How do you do a JV when wholesaling?
So you can do it a couple of different ways, but for me, I try to keep it simple. I want it to be 50-50, right? Because I feel like both people are bringing value. Not everybody works like that. I've taken less, but you know, if somebody brings me a deal, I just let them know, hey, if we JV on this deal, number one, I need exclusivity. Like you're not sending us to 8 other wholesalers. It's just me and you working on this deal and give me at least 3 to 5 days to sell it. If I don't have any interest, I don't want to waste your time or the seller's. So we'll then partner on that. I'll bring in the buyer. They'll bring in the seller. I'll handle the paperwork. That way I know I'm not getting left out of the deal. And then I'll be in communication with title. And, you know, once same thing, the transaction closes, they'll split that assignment fee on the HUD or closing statement. And it's pretty simple. And it, you know, when I went broke, one of the times that's actually how I got myself out of a rut was I would just sell everybody's deals. And that's actually how I met my business partner too. But, you know, JV strategy can be very powerful if you have no money and a lot of hustle, right? You do have to, you know, still provide value, but it can be done.
And for anyone who doesn't know, JV just stands for joint venture. So you're basically just partnering with somebody on a deal. Why is an inheritance a potentially good opportunity?
I think probates, and we still do probates to this day. I think it's very powerful because other than a referral lead, it's like one of the top motivations. You know, typically it's mom or dad's house. They grew up there. So it's already like on a personal level, a very sticky situation. They remember swinging in the backyard, you know, playing ball in the house. On top of that, these homes, you know, elderly people have lived there. You know, a lot of times they still take care. The house is in great condition. It's just very outdated to today's standards, you know, so we want to open up some walls or add some granite, you know, just all the stuff people see on HGTV. But it's very powerful because they usually need to sell. They don't want anything to do with the house. Now, you know, typically they've already been through the probate process, which takes usually 6 months to a year. So not only, you know, have they had to deal with the death, the burial, all these other things that goes into bringing the family together, there's family issues. Then you have this asset that everybody wants a part of. It's just a big burden on the family. And if you can come in and make it about them and focus on the people and their problems, you can usually, you know, as wholesalers, that's mainly what we do, is exchange convenience for equity. And, you know, that's what you can do with inheritance and probate properties.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey, everyone, it's Patrick, your host of Millennial Investing. Every year, my buddies and I do a guys trip to escape the cold and dreary Ohio winters. Once we pick our destination, without fail, we all jump on Airbnb and find an incredible place to stay. We just got back from an amazing trip in Palm Springs, California, and our Airbnb home was a huge part of creating memories we'll never forget. I loved it so much, I'm taking my family back to Palm Springs for spring break, and we're staying in an Airbnb home my kids fell in love with and picked out themselves. While I was there, I had the realization that my own home could be an Airbnb. It's an excellent way to earn some extra cash, whether you're saving up for your next vacation, paying off some bills, or investing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host.
Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/millennialinvesting. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
Do you guys ever feel overwhelmed with all that's going on in the markets and feel like you just can't keep up with the day-to-day news headlines? Today's show sponsor, Yahoo Finance, is my go-to solution to keeping up with today's top news and stay informed with what is happening globally. With Yahoo Finance, I'm able to see the biggest trends and biggest movers in the stock market, what is happening with interest rates, major geopolitical events, and much more. If it wasn't for Yahoo Finance, I would have no idea that Tesla is laying off 10% of their staff or why iPhone shipments are down 9% year over year. Yahoo Finance also has a number of other cool features, including a tool that lets you link in all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts. Yahoo Finance is one of my favorite tools I use in my investing toolkit, and it's what I use each morning to kick off my day and stay in the loop with what's happening in the markets. Join more than 90 million monthly users today and get comprehensive financial news and analysis at yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
All right, back to the show.
Anytime I talk about wholesale, especially to people who aren't in real estate yet, they're looking to get started, pretty much no one believes that you can get a property like that that's under market value, because they always wonder, like, but why would they go under contract with you on that property when they could just call a real estate agent and have an agent list it for them and get what it's actually worth? So talk to us a little bit about how these opportunities are real and how they actually happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny to me because, like, it blows realtors' minds, like the things that we can do, right? Because the thing I love about investing is pretty much how I've lived my life. Like I told you, I get so much freedom. There's obviously a right and a wrong way to do it, but if done correctly, you know, people just don't want to deal with a realtor. They don't want to deal with people showing it. All the things they're going to tell you, you know, of a traditional sell, they just don't want to deal with. They need convenience. The thing that I want to point out to people is, like, the homes that we get, though, aren't always in terrible condition. Like, some of the homes that I've bought recently, like, they're not in a terrible condition. They just have situations. So I'm going to give you a key example of, like, the biggest wholesale deal we ever did. It was a $50,000 deal. And there was two people. It was like Pam and Jim. They lived from Dallas. And once again, my partner and I just went in and had a conversation. And this is exactly why someone would sell their house for, you know, so little. They had a house through Corona. You know, they had been working in Dallas. They were driving back and forth, but they just wanted to live out of their camper, take all the equity that they had earned in their house, which was like $200,000 or $300,000, and just live in their mobile home. Simple, wanted to live in Dallas. He did construction and project management. That's just how they wanted to live their life and retire. Now, when we went on the appointment and we actually just sat down and talked to them for like an hour and a half, like not even about the house, like just started talking to them. He was from Tennessee. I'm from Tennessee. So we built great rapport. What we found out is the house was a very sensitive subject because when their son, I think when he was in high school, I think he was 18 or 17, he overdosed on opioids, which I'm very familiar with in Tennessee. It's a bad problem. But once again, I just genuinely went in and talked to these people and understood their problem. Now, when we got the lead, the home was worth like close to like 430. They had a number that they wanted. And to them, once we talked at the end, I was just like, hey, you know, I'm just the same line I tell everybody. I'm not here to beat you up on numbers, which is totally true. Like, I just need to know what your number is and I'll see if I can make it to it. And for them, their number was 325. In my mind, I was at 350 worst case, but they wanted 325. And I was like, you know, hey, look, I'll give you 330 because that way it's still a win for them. They're getting 5,000 more, but the house wasn't in terrible condition. And then I turned around and I sold that house to a realtor. Her and her husband were flippers and they bought the house for, we got it for 330. They bought it for 380. So we made $50,000 in 3 weeks. But the main point in that is everybody got what they wanted out of the situation, but it was because we genuinely went in and understood their situation. They also needed time to get things out. They needed a little bit of money to move all the stuff that they were keeping to Dallas. There was a couple of things that they wanted to leave in their house that was their son's. So it was just like a bunch of touchy subjects. But by being a good person and just going in and listening to them and their situation, you know, they had a number they wanted. They had an idea of what they wanted to happen. And we just put all those pieces together. And for that, they were willing to give up some of their equity. So that's in a simple form of, you know, wholesaling. We get, you know, we exchange convenience for equity. And, you know, some of the things that I've done for sellers is ridiculous. Like, we're about to move a seller right now on a house from Houston to North Carolina. And, you know, his wife has to come. Like, there's so many moving pieces that goes into wholesaling. And that's why I always say, if you can figure out wholesaling, you can figure out any aspect of this business.
I know there's going to be a lot of people that hear that example and they're just like, that's a one-off. Like, that doesn't happen. You know, people aren't going to give up $50,000 just so they don't have to deal with a real estate agent. And in a sense, I think they're right. Like, this is a probably what? Tell me the numbers, but 1 in 100 people, maybe 1 in 100 leads you get, 2 in 100, maybe. I don't know what the numbers look like, but it's not everybody that this is going to happen for, but it is possible. Yeah.
You take a lot of rejection and that's fine. I'm not for everybody, but that's any business, right? You run through numbers, you find those people that you like, trust, and want to do business with you. And it's just not as crazy. Like, sometimes we focus on like, why would someone do that? That's not for you to understand, right? If you inherited, you know, if you just had a pain in your side and you wanted to get rid of it, sometimes I'll pay extra money just to get out of that pain right now. You know what I mean? Because my time is more valuable. Like you said, that's 1 in 100. And we don't wholesale as much, but our average wholesale fee is like 15 to 20,000, depending. You know what I mean? Like I said, that was our biggest deal. But I just wanted to give that example because that house was actually in great condition. And those people, they just had, that was an ideal situation of what everything that was going on. But it is possible.
We talk about probate, inherited properties. What are some of the other options that are out there to find deals like this? Not necessarily like the actual strategies, how you get those leads. We'll talk about that in just a second. But like, what are some of the other situations that people are going through, like probate, that you have found popular for finding good deals?
I think you just need to think about life situations, really. Like, what would make someone want to sell the house, right? For me, and that's just motivation. So what does motivation look like? Well, it looks different to everybody. But for me, I would think, if somebody had a house and they had really bad tenants and they just went through an eviction, they probably might think about selling, right? Just to get rid of that pain. Or if somebody owned a house and they didn't live there, and I realized that the water's been shut off for 6 months, why has the water been shut off? So they're getting notes from the city because the grass is overgrown because nobody lives there. So like, these are all the things you can think about: probates, code violation, evictions, water shut off. They have lists for, you know, all the fire damaged houses, you know, in the city, divorce, pre-foreclosure, inheritance, just really life situations. Tax default is big in Houston because, like, if you don't pay your taxes, they're going to foreclose. So if somebody's going to lose their house, they would rather get something than nothing. So you just got to figure out how to like target these motivations and then problem solve and get these people the number that they're asking.
So we understand the different types of situations that might come up that could lead to a good opportunity for somebody like us as investors. How do we actually find those people? How do we find those deals? You mentioned direct mail. How does that work? What other strategies are you using?
So we actually haven't done direct mail in probably 2 years, but we're actually thinking about starting again next year just to test a few things. But for us, I mean, right now we're doing a lot of cold calling, a lot of texting. We do SEO, which is like search engine optimization. Those are really good leads because that's people looking for you. Anytime you can have like inbound versus outbound leads, like that's going to, you know, obviously be higher motivation. But we get a lot of deals from cold calling. And then this month, actually, most of our deals came from social media, just people seeing what me and my business partner do. You know, we have a little bit of a following and also just giving back, helping people. Like we help so many new investors close their first deal. And, you know, now that we're buying, we can make deals work more, you know, pay them a little on the front, some on the back, just whatever we need to do to put the deal together. But, you know, we get a lot of deals from social media. Pretty much most people have followed my journey from server, you know, 5.5 years ago to now, like I'm buying, you know, 5-6 houses at a time, sometimes a month or in a week. So, you know, I just share all that information and, you know, people reach out. But, you know, you have direct mail, RVM, like ringless voicemails, direct mail with the letters, postcards, cold calling. You could do PPC, which is like pay-per-click, like the little ads on the side of Google and stuff like that. So, I mean, however you can pull a list and just target these people and like retarget them over and over again, because, you know, we're all humans and we know how marketing works. It's going to take, you know, 6 to 10 times before somebody even thinks about calling you.
Speaking of new investors, in a recent video that you put out, you mentioned that you still get nervous from time to time when you're closing a deal, even though you've done hundreds of them. How can new investors get over their fear of being nervous? How can they just push through that despite being nervous?
Like Nike, just do it, man. Like for me, yeah, I do get nervous, mainly on cold calls. Like even if you gave me like a warm lead, I just hate over the phone interactions. Like you can't read people's body language. I do a lot better in person. So like being able to, you know, read their language, read how they push back or pull in when I say certain things, you know, I just do better in person. But I think just doing it, like that muscle just gets stronger. Like even though I hate it, I would still do it. There's a lot of things that I hate that I still do. I don't love working out, but I make myself do it. There comes a certain point when you want to learn a new skill that you have to look at yourself in the mirror and just like really ask yourself, are you about it? And maybe you're not, that's totally fine. But for me, my fear of not knowing what could happen, you know, like I risk everything to move to Houston. So it's like, I can't leave anything else on the table anymore. Like just because it makes me uncomfortable, I'll just eventually hire somebody to do those things. Like my partner, he loves hopping on the phone. He's like one of the best communicators I've ever met in this world. But for me, I just would rather do it in person. I'm a red personality. I want to get to the point. So that's why I focus on construction and dealing with other people rather than like trying to close deals. I'm more of the driver, whereas like, you know, getting things done, where he's more like the smaller details and communicating with sellers and stuff like that. But I think just strengthening that muscle, just doing it, like forever, I was nervous about doing stuff like this, podcasts and speaking. You know, I'm very illiterate. I'm from a small country town. It's just that I have those insecurities, but I want to get better. I want to be a better communicator. You know, I want to be a better dad. I want to be a better investor. So to do those and get better at those things, you're going to have to do a lot of things you don't want to do. That's just life.
You recently had a property where your windows got stolen and your contractor ended up leaving you high and dry. Talk us through what went on with that deal.
Man, flipping has taught me so much. And contractors, as they've heard on, you know, bigger pockets in your show, is like the hardest thing. And, you know, that's been my biggest lesson this year. So what happened was we have these two projects. They're going to be our first Airbnbs. We basically, you know, we're building an Airbnb portfolio, which we can talk about later. But in this very gentrifying area, you know, with gentrifying areas comes gentrifying problems. And we've had a lot of theft and, you know, we lost our windows. I don't know if the contractor himself stole them or somebody else did. That's neither here nor there. The point is the windows got stole. And then at the same time, there was an ice storm in Houston, which is like not happened in so many years. So you know, with that, we had all these other flips going on, some of them flooded. So my contractor still to this day, that specific one, I have not talked to since the storm, since the windows got stole, you know, and that's just the reality. I just got to the point where I was like, I'm not chasing around another grown man. Like, I'll just have to take that loss. But, you know, contractors has been the hardest thing. And, you know, knock on wood, now I have an amazing GC who's killing it. But, you know, that's been my, I've probably been through easily like 15 contractors this year. But it also, that all those lessons, you know, just taught me what to look for and how quick to spot, you know, the BS and all the things that, you know, contractors will overpromise and underdeliver. I would much rather you underpromise and overdeliver, but most people don't operate like that.
You've mentioned that you have 3, 4, 5, 6 properties and projects going on at the same time, as well as trying to buy more. How do you manage so many projects at once?
It's gotten easier mainly because I've learned systems and flows. Also, the deals that we're doing, I'm a very lazy flipper. So, you know, we try to get deals that are going to be, you know, $30,000, $40,000 and under, just quick turnarounds, 2 or 3 weeks. But having a good GC and good money partners and people that just trust us, they do their part and they let us do our part. That's been like the most beneficial thing. Like, relationships has really taken us to the next level. And like I said, just learning the flow of, like I said, I think we own 12 right now. You know, 4 or 5 of those are pending selling or just hit the market. 3 or 4 are actually under construction. 2 just finished. Like, you know, there's just different phases of it. But, you know, having a strong team around you is what makes the difference. And I haven't always had that, you know, really until the last like 6 months. And, you know, as long as everybody stays on the boat, you know, we're going to have a really great year and, you know, we're just going to keep growing in the amount of houses and, you know, people that we can impact and help.
Partially because I think a lot of people only talk about wins in real estate, and a lot of podcasters just win after win after win, which is, you know, it's motivating. You can learn a lot from it, but I think you can learn a lot from some of the negative things people have gone through. And also, I think it's important for people that are listening to the show to realize real estate isn't always sunshine and rainbows. So tell us a bit more about your horror stories that you've had in real estate.
Wow. I don't know if we could do a whole separate podcast. I always say, and I made a post about this the other day, is like, you're going to take way more losses than you do wins, especially in real estate. Like, there's a reason most people don't last more than 2 years in this business. For me, it's like, I don't have an option, right? Like, this is my key to wealth. But I can tell you, I mean, we have a house right now that we're flipping that we bought, and the guy, he was just dumping kitty litter down the tub. So the pipes in the freeze obviously burst. They were full of cat poop. And, you know, the house had a leak. Well, I went to check on the house before we closed on it. Another pipe had burst. So when I pulled up, there was water spewing out of the house through the garage, you know, everything. I've had water heater burst in one of our new rentals a couple weeks ago, flooded the kitchen. My very first rental was probably the worst. That house caught on fire. I had crappy contractors and they threw rags in the toilet. So then it backlogged and flooded all over my new floors. I also had an explosion randomly happen on a chemical plant that blew out a window. Luckily, where my house was placed, you know, that was the only damage, because some of those houses got completely blown off of foundation. Man, I could go on. I really have so many stories. Like I said, my contractor just leaving me high and dry, stealing from me. We've caught contractors doing heroin on our job sites. I'm redoing that house where the windows got stolen. I'm having to redo a majority of the work because we didn't pass inspection because of crappy contractors. If you know, most of these stories relate back to crappy contractors. I got extorted one time for like $3,000 from a contractor that my GC hired and did not pay, but he was very sketchy. And he basically placed a mechanic's lien on a house that we, it's just like, I have so many, like, I could go on for days and days, but I say this to say, like, don't let it scare you. Like, I'm so mute to like good and bad things. Like, sometimes my wife is like, how are you so like sane? Just because so many bad things happen. But it's like, it's just like a muscle. It strengthens. You figure out how to solve it. And then you just start learning to work with smarter people, pay a little bit more money for contractors, and you'll have to worry less.
For those who don't know, what is a mechanic's lien?
A mechanic's lien is just a lien that you can place on a property it's kind of crazy. Texas has these weird laws, but you could, like, I could, if you lived here and I said I worked on your yard, I could just go file a mechanics lien. Like, anybody can do it to anybody. But it just says that, like, I wasn't paid for this job. And now I'm putting a lien on your property. So if you ever go try to sell and somebody does a title search, which you should if you're buying a property, it'll pull up that lien. And I think it takes like 10 plus or 20 something years to fall off. And then you still may have to fight it. It just depends on if the person's still in business, but it's just a lien someone can put on your house. And it's kind of crazy.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey everyone, it's Patrick, your host of Millennial Investing. Every year, my buddies and I do a guy's trip to escape the cold and dreary Ohio winters. Once we pick our destination, without fail, we all jump on Airbnb and find an incredible place to stay. We just got back from an amazing trip in Palm Springs, California, and our Airbnb home was a huge part of creating memories we'll never forget. I loved it so much, I'm taking my family back to Palm Springs for spring break, and we're staying in an Airbnb home my kids fell in love with and picked out themselves. While I was there, I had the realization that my own home could be an Airbnb. It's an excellent way to earn some extra cash, whether you're saving up for your next vacation, paying off some bills, or investing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host.
Today's show is sponsored by public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member of FINRA-SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into a partner bank where they can earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days. I've noticed this at my own businesses that I've run. You'd be wise to find proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/MI. netsuite.com/MI. That's netsuite.com/MI.
All right, back to the show.
So with all these issues that you're finding with contractors, what are you seeing as a common characteristic amongst them that you're looking for as red flags for future contractors that you hire?
I just made a video on YouTube about like finding good contractors, which is almost an oxymoron. But basically, I think the main thing is just realize, and this is just a life lesson, how you do anything is how you do everything. So if you call up a contractor to come bid out your house and they're 20 minutes late, that's a red flag for me. If they don't even show up to the appointment because something came up, you don't value my time, that's a red flag for me. Or if you're walking the job and they're not diligently writing things down, taking measurements, like pointing out things that may become an issue in the future or have initiative, that's a big thing just with dealing with people or contractors. A lot of contractors are lazy. Like my last contractor, he was a great guy. However, his workers did not pay attention to detail, and not even on like, I'm trying to be like, you know, super micromanaging, but just like, hey, you guys removed wood over here, but you didn't paint. So I just have like this lumber piece that looks like it was on the wall and everything else is painted. Just like being lazy, not taking initiative, not paying attention to detail, not showing up. I show up on the job and there's only one person working, but I'm, you know, paying thousands of dollars, never give anybody money up front. Like never give anybody money up front. You know, if they want money, just tell them you'll pay for the materials the first week and you'll provide them for the job. Ask them when they quote you, is that for labor and materials or just, you know, labor? And if you just get a bad gut feeling, if it takes them 8 days to get you a bid after they, you know, like my last guy, every time I try to still quote new contractors, I was already like 4 days into the job by the time one of the guys got me the bid back. Like I just never responded because it's like, I'm already, you know, halfway through the job at this point. It was a small job.
We've talked a bit about your struggles, what can be hard in real estate, but on the flip side, what's going well in your real estate business? What are you proud of that you're succeeding at?
That's a great question. My mental health is good. I think that's a major one. I always say the most important real estate is like between your two ears. So like trying to, you know, manage all these flips. I'm, you know, buying rentals with my partner, buying rentals for my personal portfolio, trying to be a dad. My son's playing three sports right now. We have a toddler. But honestly, the thing that I'm most proud of is my willingness to keep going. I'm super excited about life right now and like where things are heading. For my life, when I think about when I lived in Tennessee, like I've kind of hit the peak. Like, you know, for me, as long as I made six figures and I was in real estate, like that's all I ever wanted out of life. So for me, I've kind of already hit that peak. So everything else is extra. Not that I'm slowing down by any means, like I'm hungrier than ever, but like I'm for once content. Like I don't have things to worry about. Like my light's getting shut off. My wife doesn't have to work anymore. You know, I was able to retire her like about a year ago, you know, which was great because she supported me for many years. You know, just being able to like last week, we took a last minute trip to Colorado to visit a friend and like, you know, learn real estate, just like simple things. Like I'm just like trying. I've been in this like total point of like thankfulness, especially since COVID, you know, it kind of slowed us down and like made us all realize like what was important in life and like just having my daughter and, you know, just like slowing down and spending a lot of time with them. It just made me realize like, hey, I do need to go harder, but also like, I'm very thankful to be, you know, at this position, you know, way before 30, well, a year before 30, but still I try to distance it as much as I can. But my point being is, you know, I'm doing better than most people my age, not to brag, but I'm also realized that I have a very long way to go. And for that, I'm very thankful.
What impact has social media had on your real estate investing and your just business as a whole? Do you think it's worth spending the time and money for a new investor to build a personal brand on social media to help their real estate investing if they're just getting started?
100%. I'm a big proponent of social media. Social media has taken my business to so many different levels. On top of that, it's just like my own documentary that I get to look back and just like see the transformation. Because, you know, the thing that I try to relate to with most people, because, you know, social media is a lot of fluff too, is like the reality of like a regular guy, you know, who was waiting tables, was a broke college kid, you know, can get into this business and, you know, really start building wealth. And yeah, it's going to take longer than you think, but, you know, social media has just kind of snowballed that where I've been able to meet, you know, awesome people like you and, you know, everybody in the mastermind, getting on podcasts like this. Just, you know, people learning me, because I think, you know, exposure equals expansion. So like, if you see somebody, that's my whole thing with doing it, is like, if you see somebody that looks like you and, you know, you hear their story and you relate with that, like know that it's possible, because, you know, there are, you know, the fake gurus and all this stuff, but like, you know, I'm a regular guy, I drive a cash car. I'm just trying to buy assets for my family. I'm not like rich by any means. I actually live broker than most people who would be in my position, because all my money gets reinvested. You know, I want people to see that it's possible. And for me, I get to see other people that we've helped. There's a guy in our market that he struggled in real estate for like a year and a half, and then he started working with us. And now we just locked up, I think, our sixth property, like that we're going to buy from him. So just like see his journey. And like, that's just one of the many people that we've been able to impact. It's just beautiful. And then, like I said, I just get to document the whole thing
and help more and more people and meet cooler people. It just makes the world smaller. And, you know, for that, I'm very thankful. And, you know, you need to find your tribe when you're doing, you know, something like this. Like, I don't know about for you, but like, I'm definitely the wealthiest person in my family. And I'm literally, you know, branching out to a whole new generation of people that I realize that like money is possible. Wealth is attainable. You know, like for generations, I'll be that one person that, you know, did something different for our family and our legacy. And, you know, that's not going to be easy, but that's why I just try to share my journey on, you know, social media, because people need to see that it's possible.
For new investors that are listening to the episode, whether they've done no deals or just a couple deals, where do you see the best opportunities for them?
Getting really good at finding off-market, deeply discounted properties. It's crazy to me that people still say, you know, I've been doing this almost 6 years, that you can't find deals. And it's like, I just bought a $170,000 to $180,000 house for $55,000. Like the fact that people say that that's not possible, it's like, it's definitely possible. So if you just got really good at that one skill of finding just deeply discounted properties, preferably off market, everything else would take care of itself. Whether you wanted to keep it as a rental or flip it or partner with somebody or wholesale it. Like if you got really good at that one skill, you'll be ahead of everybody.
So we've talked a bit about what new investors should do to get started and what you're doing in your business now. What are you going to do next? What is your end goal?
For me, obviously bigger deals. I'm really fascinated with like self-storage and mobile home parks. Just growing up in Tennessee, it was something that always as a kid made sense. And it looked like to be the only viable long-term business there. And now that I get older and I'm actually in real estate, I realize like it's one of the best asset classes. Obviously it's a hot thing right now, but it's something I've been looking at for a few years. So bigger deals, like I said, we're about to do this development deal that we just closed on yesterday. So that's going to like Brandon always says, just add another tool to our tool belt. You know, we've done some creative deals as well. So just really doing bigger deals, more deals. I'm going to keep growing the social media and, you know, just keep living life, traveling with my family, you know, just doing more dope stuff, really. And enjoying life and buying a lot of real estate and, you know, starting other businesses. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. So like real estate is just kind of like the key to get me going and will forever be a part of my life. But, you know, I have a few other businesses that I definitely want to get involved in and just have multiple streams of income and yeah, man, just get wealthy and do that with my family and just enjoy it.
We have a segment at the end of our shows called The Action Plan, where I ask every guest three questions that gives everybody listening three steps to take when they're done with this episode. So the first question is, what is a habit or principle that you follow in your life that you think has had a big impact on your success, but not enough people do, but people listening to the show should?
I would say working out or taking care of your body. And when I say working out, I don't mean just like going to the gym. That's great. I do it mainly for my mental health, but like that mental health, like focusing on making sure you're good, checking on your friends, but also having someone to talk to and relating and, you know, finding your tribe that people understand what you're going through. Cause sometimes it can sound like you're complaining if you're just talking to like people that aren't on the same journey as you, you know, or it may sound like bragging just because, you know, your problems are different. I have friends that are millionaires that complain about, you know, how expensive it is for their Ferrari to get changed. You know, I don't, you know, I know they're not bragging. That's just their reality. So just, you know, keeping your mental health intact and good people around you.
I've been asked that question before and fitness health is always my answer too. So I really like that answer.
Yeah, it sucks, man. I say I love fitness. I love how it makes me feel, but like nobody enjoys just beating themselves up. Like, but you feel great afterward. It's like the total, like how life works. Like you have to do it.
Yeah, I think I really do like it though. I really think it's something I love. I don't know why.
It's good. It's easier for you then.
What has been the most influential book in your life? I don't necessarily mean your favorite, but more so had the biggest impact.
Yeah, it's funny because I gave this one and I'll give it here too the other day. It's The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. That book is, it just like when I first started entrepreneurship and real estate, it's really just a bunch of small stories in one big book, but they all relate and they're all told differently. And there's just like three or four stories that stick out about being consistent and, you know, how hard it's going to be. And I just recommended that book to someone else and they were telling me how much they loved it. And I was on another podcast and they said that book was very impactful for them. So The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson.
I have actually never heard that one before. I've never even heard of it. So I'm going to pull that up here on my Amazon and add it to my list. Probably add it to my shopping cart.
Yeah, it's a very easy read. Like I said, it's probably like 20 small stories in one book, but they're all great, quick reads, easy read for sure.
When this episode's over, before the listener jumps to their next podcast episode that they have queued up, what's one action they should take that can help improve their life, career, or business?
Follow me on Instagram and see, you know what I mean? And I don't say that egotistically. I say that as like, I really do the business. Whether you want to do real estate or not, I think everybody should buy some form of real estate for tax benefits and retirement. But I can show you guys how to do that and, you know, not really have a lot of money out of pocket. It's going to, you know, take a lot of work, but you can see what it's like. And like I said, I'm a normal guy. I feel like I'm pretty relatable because it's like, there's nothing really too special about me. I'm just a very hard worker. So yeah, follow me for sure at Flipping a House. One word.
Before we give a handoff to other places that people can find you, I like to wrap up the show by turning the tables and letting the guest ask me a question. So Derek, what question do you have for me?
What does real estate mean to you and how big of an impact has it been on your life?
What real estate means to me is freedom. I think if I had to summarize it all in one word, it would be freedom. And that's for a couple of reasons. Freedom in the sense that you get to choose what you do. You decide, do you buy single family? Do you buy multifamily? Do you flip? Do you wholesale? Do you do Airbnb? I mean, you have the freedom to choose. There's nobody that's going to tell you what you have to do. So you get to choose. And then the other side of it, of course, is financial freedom. Depending on your strategy, you could have passive income, which could lead to great financial freedom in the future. So to me, that's what it means. And in terms of the impact it's had on my life, it's had a huge impact. It has impacted me financially, but more so from a mindset perspective. I think if I'm thinking about the biggest impact, it's more from a mindset because a lot of the bets that I've made in real estate so far have been super long term. So I haven't really reap the fruit of those bets yet. So like financially, I mean, it's been okay, but it hasn't been like massive yet. But 20 years from now, it's going to be massive. I'm going to look back and say, when you were 25 and now you're 45, you made some really good decisions that your past self really thanks you for, you know? So financially, it hasn't been massive yet, but mindset is just huge. It's really taught me that I could do anything, that you can do anything you want. And it's just really makes you approach the world in a different way, business in a different way. You start to look at everything differently. And yeah, I think the mindset piece has been the most impactful for me.
I just want to add to that, man. Like you said, like, and I kind of referenced earlier, you don't buy a house and like get rich tomorrow. Like I've bought, you know, two or three houses and I've gained like a couple hundred thousand in equity. And I'm just now like realizing that now. And it's like, but I still can't do anything with it. I mean, I can pull it out and use it. You know, equity isn't real till you use it, but I think, you know, me and my partner talk about this all the time, you know, in 20 years, we're going to like wish we could talk to ourselves today and be like, just high five ourselves. Like you did that, man. Like, thank you so much. Like, cause you know, my life, like I said, I can afford a few different things, but for the most part, I still live like I did when I was a server. All my money just gets reinvested or goes out. As soon as it comes in, it's already has a designation of a new property. So I think people need to realize that. And I'm on year six, like I said, and I'm just now realizing like, a small gain, right? And it snowballs. That's what it talks about in The Slight Edge. Like, don't think though, like, you know, just because it's 10% now, it's not going to jump to 70% in 1 year. You just have to keep going. And most people don't keep going.
A lot of people, at least in my life, see they're like, you're buying rental properties to get $300 a month. Like, what is the point of that? And I'm like, yeah, but I'm going to own, I don't know, 50 units, 100 units at $300 a month. Then it's going to start to add up. And the other piece that I think a lot of people miss is even if I didn't buy another piece of real estate from today on, I could retire on just what I own today. Not now, but in 20 years when everything is paid off, I'm going to have over $1 million in real estate that's completely paid off. That's all mine. And I mean, people try to save up in their retirement accounts in the stock market to save over $1 million. I already have that in real estate because people are going to pay that off for me over the next 20 years. And so that's the other piece is right now it's not huge financially, but 15, 20, 30 years from now, it's going to be big. So I guess that's a key takeaway for everybody listening to this episode. Think long-term always, but especially in real estate. Derek, for everybody that's enjoyed this episode, where is the best place to find you?
Yeah, I think the best is probably Instagram, but I'm also working on building my YouTube and TikTok, and it's all at Flipping a House, one word. And yeah, just reach out. And like, I answer all my DMs. I try to put out daily content on TikTok, weekly content on YouTube, and daily content on Instagram, just kind of sharing my day to day and, you know, what it takes to become successful. And it's not that exciting. Like you said, it's the boring stuff, but you know, it's, for me, I love it because I know that it's a proven method. Like you said, like we're going to thank ourselves. There's a couple that we met that their son goes to school with us. They've been in real estate for like 30 years and they've just bought a bunch of rentals and now they do commercial. And I know the formula works over and over again and they live exactly how I want to live. And like you said, it's just freedom, freedom of choice.
I'll be sure to put a link to your resources in the show notes below for anybody that's interested in connecting with you, checking out what you're working on. And you can go to my Instagram. I don't follow a lot of people, but Derek is one of, I think I follow less than 50 people. Derek is one of those people in the 50. So you can also find him there. If you didn't catch his username, just look at the people who I follow and you'll be able to find him there. And my username is the Robert Leonard. Derek, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate you joining me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right, guys, that's all I had for this week's episode of Real Estate Investing. I'll see you again next week.
Thank you for listening to TIP. Make sure to subscribe to We Study Billionaires by the Investors Podcast Network. Every Wednesday, we teach you about Bitcoin, and every Saturday, we study billionaires and the financial markets. To access our show notes, transcripts, or courses, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decision, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by the Investors Podcast Network. Written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.